Hello there, this is E. Prasaran, and I'm talking to Dr. Gadgil, Dr. Dilip Gadgil here from Pune, India. He is a renowned Vaidya. And tonight we have a special topic. We're going to talk about a specialty of Dr. Gadgil's, which is cancer, or what we refer to cancer as in the West.
Okay.
It's not seen quite so simply in Ayurveda, is it?
No, it's not known as cancer in Ayurveda, because this is a modern term and coined by the conventional medicine. But of course, Ayurveda has a capacity to accommodate any kind of disease, whether new or old or something.
There's nothing like cancer?
Some people are of opinion that Arbuda, described in Ayurvedic texts, somewhat resembles cancer, particularly Mausa Arbuda and Rakta Arbuda.
So muscle and blood.
Yeah, but only thing is, there is no mention about any kind of treatment for these two varieties of cancer.
Really?
Yeah, because Sushruta Acharya just says that it is incurable and doesn't say about any kind of treatment.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So, from treatment point of view, this is not very useful information.
No, not at all.
I am of a different opinion. Let us accept it as a new entity. That is what my opinion is. Of course, it's a tough job when you say that it's a new entity, because then you have to say about the causative factors, the pre-symptoms, the signs and symptoms, the upashaya and anupashaya, with what you feel better, what relieves and what aggravates the disease, and the overall pathogenesis of the disease, how it occurs, what we call as samprapti. And then, of course, further you have to say about the curability of the disease, the various stages. So it's a vast subject. There are varieties of cancer and varieties of conditions and so many things. So it is rather difficult to just say cancer as a new entity. But still, I'm working on that for last 28 years or so.
How did you get involved in the subject?
Okay, that's a very good story. First case was reported to me around 28 years before. He was a guy, 67 years of age. He had jaundice. And so he was investigated. And they found that there is a tumor arising from the gallbladder and spreading into liver and intestines. So it was a cholangiocarcinoma. And they wanted to operate to remove that tumor. So they opened up. On opening, they found that it is overgrown, would bleed on touch, and it was adherent, totally adherent, so not at all operable. So the surgeon just sutured back and discharged the patient, saying that there is no survival more than 15 days.
Wow.
Fortunately enough, he advised the relatives of the patient to seek Ayurvedic guidance, if possible. So they started searching. Ayurveda was not, of course, at all popular at that time, and there were very few Ayurvedic practitioners as such. One of my students was his relative, so he approached me. And he said the lifespan, as expected by the doctors, is just 15 days. Can we do something? I said, okay, let us try.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? And I also took guidance from my guru, Vaidya Kollatkar. And we decided to keep him only on milk diet. That was the first case. And we started with some medication as well. He responded. And he survived. That was the first thing. And within a span of 6 months, he was able to get out of the house.
Wow.
He started consuming around 2 and 2.5 liters of milk. He was only on milk diet. No other food was given. Yeah. And later on, he continued on only milk diet for 6 months. And then 1 and 1.5 liters of milk every day with other meals as well. And he's still alive after 28 years. Now he is 95.
Wow.
Current age. We interviewed him last year. We took a video recording of him. Okay, this was a miracle, so to say. So this case started fetching me so many cases.
Right.
And that's how it all began. The flow of cancer patients started. And then there are so many stories now. There are so many cases which I can explain about.
Right.
But anyway, it's a very challenging disease as such, life-threatening disease. So I want to emphasize more on cancer, particularly the prevention aspect of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That is the need of the hour.
All right, let's start there then.
Yeah. When I talk about prevention, that is on two levels that I try to achieve or spread the message. One is the secondary level. What happens? The conventional medicine has a principle of destruction of cells.
Mm-hmm.
And it is achieved through surgery, chemotherapy and radiation. These are three means.
Mm-hmm. Destroying the unhealthy cells.
Destroy mm-hmm. the cancer. Many times it so happens that the whole treatment in conventional way is done. And there is a so-called disease-free state of the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's very tricky because no one really knows whether the disease has completely gone or it's a gap between recurrence of the disease-free state or something like that. So conventional medicine doesn't have any philosophy to prevent the recurrence. They just keep on observing the patient with various kinds of investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And there are great chances in first 5 years that the disease relapses. So periodically after 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, investigations are done. The moment it is seen that a recurrence has occurred at the same site or a distant place, metastasis, mm-hmm. something like that, again the conventional medicine starts playing its role. Chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, whatever is available or something like that, or whatever is suitable in that condition. But now the success rate is very low. Once there is a recurrence or once there is a metastasis, it is very low.
Mm-hmm.
And generally this stage won't last for a long period. Again, there will be aggravation of the disease, new sites will be found. And ultimately, conventional medicine will have nothing left to be offered to the patient. And the patient is going to die after, say, 15 days, 1 month, 2 months or something like mm-hmm. that. And then the patients have really no choice what to do.
Right.
So they start searching so-called alternatives. So in India, Ayurveda is alternative.
As here.
It should not have been like that, but it is so.
Uh-huh.
So they start searching and then they approach some vaidya or something like that. And at that time, it is only possible to have better quality of life and prolongation to a certain extent. That is what we can achieve, not more than that.
As opposed to hoping for a reversal.
Yeah. But even then, this is an achievable target. So I wanted to catch them at least in the disease-free state. Now, Ayurveda has a very big foundation and very good philosophy for avoidance of the recurrence. Because we look into the lifestyle aspect.
Mm-hmm.
We look into his dietary pattern, his stress, and so many things, holistic manner.
Mm-hmm.
So all these issues can be handled effectively through Ayurvedic management. On one hand, we may have panchakarma to eliminate the imbalanced doshas from the body.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, we can strengthen the body tissues with what we call as rasayana or rejuvenating treatment.
Mm-hmm. Of course, once somebody has developed something like cancer, would you ever do panchakarma?
In acute stage, it is very difficult to say. But in disease-free state, of course, we can do everything. There is no problem. There is some scope for some panchakarmas, mm-hmm. like application of leeches, bloodletting,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
then basti to certain extent. Mostly women and virechan is not possible.
Not too dramatic.
Yeah, these are more rigorous treatments. But there are certain varieties of basti which can be nourishing.
Right.
And so, though it's not a purification process, but it helps.
Right.
In some varieties of, say, esophageal cancer, when there is total obstruction and nothing, even liquid cannot enter, then basti has helped. That is very true.
Right.
So there is some scope for panchakarma.
Mm-hmm.
But in disease-free state, it is very well possible.
When you say disease-free, maybe somebody's gotten a test back that shows that there's allopathically what's developing as cancer, but they still feel fine.
What generally happens, cancer is diagnosed most of the times through various kinds of investigations.
Right.
The structures are so minute and the abnormal cells, when they form a cluster, so-called, so to say, a lesion or tumor, It contains millions of cells, actually. So, with today's current advances in physics, particularly, the scans and MRIs and PET scans, there are so many things now. Mm-hmm. It is possible to note very minute changes at physical level. And that is how cancer is diagnosed most of the times. They do go in for biopsy or FNAC or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, on the basis of these investigations, they say that there is cancer in this particular area or something. Now, if we want to reassess what has happened to the tumor and other things, etc., then again you have to go follow the same path, the same investigations. Now, there are many blood markers coming up. Mm-hmm. Say PSA for prostate, CA15.3 for breast cancer, CA125 for ovarian cancer, like mm-hmm. that. We can have a watch just by the blood check, whether the disease is progressing or regressing, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Less invasive procedures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But to my surprise, many conventional doctors don't use these blood markers. They do it more on the scans and biopsies and other things. But it's better to have assessment on these markers, which is rather simpler method, mm-hmm. non-invasive method. If we do the markers or we do the investigations, and if we are able to maintain the disease-free state, nothing like that. My primary concern was people will be very happy to undergo Ayurvedic treatment in a disease-free state, because conventional medicine offers nothing for prevention. And secondly, after experiencing the hazards of chemotherapy and radiation particularly, nobody would be interested in doing it again if it recurs.
Right.
That was my thought. But unfortunately, this is not true.
Well, it's hard work to follow an Ayurvedic protocol.
Yeah, there are three reasons behind that. First thing is, the person says, I'm perfectly all right now. There is no disease, demonstrable disease right now. So why should I go for treatment? Mm-hmm. Nobody understands the importance of preventive treatment as such. This is one thing. Secondly, he says, I have already spent lot of money on conventional medicine for chemotherapy, radiation, etc.
Yep.
So why spend again on Ayurveda? So better avoid it. And anyway, I'm not having any disease right now. If it happens, I will do it. And third thing is, when you are saying Ayurvedic treatment, it is obvious that you will be asked to have dietary restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a general conception that Ayurveda means dietary restrictions. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So why should I put on restriction on myself? When recently I have recovered from this cancer and I was on chemotherapy, I was nauseating, vomiting and loose motions and so many things. I suffered from so many things. So I couldn't eat. So now are the days when I'm able to eat.
Yeah.
And then at the same time I want to put restrictions, not to eat this, not to eat that, etc. So better avoid. If at all I get a recurrence, I will go to Ayurveda.
But
generally
hard.
It doesn't happen like that. When there is a recurrence, they will again rush to conventional medicine. And the doctor will again start with chemotherapy, radiation, whatever options at that time. And when it fails, then only they may perhaps turn. On the other hand, the conventional doctors are not aware of Ayurveda at all.
Mm-hmm.
So even some conventional doctors have tried their level best in Ayurveda as well. They are convinced about Ayurveda.
Hmm.
But other conventional doctors are not aware of the efforts of these doctors, mm-hmm. whatever they have done from allopathic point of view, though they have done work on Ayurveda. And so they are so rigid in their views that nothing else, only conventional medicine, that's mm-hmm. all. I had a very miserable experience regarding this. A young chap at the age of 29, having colon cancer, was operated. His wife knew about me and Ayurvedic treatment. So she asked the surgeon immediately after operation whether we can go for Ayurvedic treatment now. The surgeon bluntly refused, nothing doing. I have done my job, it's fine.
Hmm.
Within 1 year there was a relapse. And then he was sent for chemotherapy. They spent 1,100,000 rupees for chemotherapy. And within 6 months there was a relapse.
Mm-hmm.
So they again went to Tata Memorial Hospital. This was done at Tata Memorial Hospital, Mumbai.
Mm.
Surprisingly, the doctors told that this was bound to happen because chemotherapy didn't have a curative role. They were just surprised. He was well educated. So he said, if you know it previously, before giving chemotherapy, that this doesn't work, why did you give it to me? The doctor said, we have no choice. You have already done surgery. The only alternative that we have in our hand is chemotherapy. Though we know that it doesn't work,
it doesn't work.
Still we don't have any options, so we advocate this. The patient started deteriorating. It was intestinal obstruction. And so he was referred back to the original surgeon where he was operated. He opened up for a possible surgery and just returned and said, no, no chance. We can't relieve the obstruction even. At that point, again, his wife urged the surgeon, now can we go for Ayurveda? Now he said, you may do whatever you want, but nothing is going to work. And he was totally shameless while explaining this. He just didn't remember that he denied Ayurvedic treatment for no reason, just to not to lose the credit of his surgery.
In India, do people tend to trust their medical doctors when they say things like that?
They do trust. They do. They believe him like God.
Many people here do too.
They do trust like that. Immediately after this, so the fellow was referred to me anyway. I tried my level best. He didn't survive. He survived just for 20 days more and then he died. After this bitter experience, I talked to that surgeon. I said to him, at least in disease-free state, you refer patients to us. He immediately said, no, we won't. And the reason behind that we don't know what Ayurveda is and does it do to the patient. I was really surprised with these words. If you don't know what Ayurveda is, try to learn what Ayurveda is. That's the answer, what Ayurveda is. And at least look at those who have worked on Ayurveda. But unfortunately, the situation is more or less the same all over India.
Right.
Very few allopathic doctors, they try at least, they look at it with a sympathetic manner. I now say that those who oppose Ayurveda, they don't know nothing about Ayurveda. So actually they don't have any authority to speak on Ayurveda.
Right.
If the patient need not seek their opinion whether to take Ayurveda or not or something like that, they should either consult Vaidya, Ayurvedic physician directly, whether they would do something to this patient or not. Or they may try to get information from other patients for whose treatment is more effective or something like that. The basic of this is Ayurveda is just not a treatment.
What do you mean by that?
Look, every science has a cause-effect relationship. Unless and until there is a proven relationship between cause and effect, nothing can exist as a science. In conventional medicine, you will find many, many diseases wherein the cause is unknown, etiology unknown. It's idiopathic or something like that. You will find this description in many, many diseases. And even in diseases wherein the cause is known or something like that, there are really no efforts to find out the cause and rule out the cause.
Right.
Whereas now this is well known that cancer, heart disease, diabetes, these are non-communicable diseases and they are associated with the lifestyle. So at least the lifestyle of the patient should be thoroughly studied, particularly for these diseases. And you may or may not start any treatment, the lifestyle changes should be done because that's the root cause. So leave aside Ayurvedic treatment, whether it has a role in cancer or not, leave aside. At least what has caused the disease, that one should understand at individual level. So there are certain causes which are common for all.
All the cancers.
All cancers or something like that. Say the hybridization in the farming. Whether it's regular farming or just animal farming. Now that hybridization led to loss of immunity of the crops. And so there was a need of prophylaxis pesticides. And that's where we started putting poison into our own food.
Right.
This happened 40, 50 years before. Now, if you have read about the book Silent Spring, written by Rachel Carson, that was an eye-opener. She studied on DDT and how hazardous it was. She proved it. And how it has disturbed the ecology.
Mm-hmm.
Her say was organic chemistry was emerging as a new science. And just by knowing a few properties of particular substance, this was put into practice, directly into practice. And many drugs from conventional medicines have been derived from organic chemistry. So her opinion was, this is unfair to do like this. You need to have a thorough study of the substance, and then only you think whether it can be on in regular use or not, or something like that.
Mm.
But unfortunately, her thoughts were suppressed. Later on, she got name and fame, and there were many followers.
Mm-hmm. Although she's largely forgotten now.
Yeah. But she died with cancer.
Mm.
So the change in farming was a drastic change. With the introduction of organic chemistry, with the pesticides and chemical fertilizers and other things.
Mm.
And that's a root cause for cancer.
You see that in all of, in many of your cancer patients?
Yeah, because this is now very common. To get organic food
is rare.
Is very difficult, it's rare. And everywhere now, this food, which is having loaded with the chemicals that we are eating right now. So cancer actually is conversion of a normal cell into an abnormal one.
Mm-hmm.
And then uncontrolled growth of that abnormal cell. That is what cancer is defined as. It's uncontrolled growth of abnormal cells. And this has started with this process of hybridization and then chemical pesticides and other things.
Mm-hmm.
Because the companies wanted to sell their seeds every year. So, what generally the farmers used to do previously, whenever a new crop arrives, you preserve some part of that for mowing for the next year.
Right, it makes sense.
Yeah. And they keep going. Now with this hybridized variety, if they are able to do like that, then the company will not have any profit.
Right. You don't need a seed company if you grow your own
seeds. They started playing with the genes. And so the fruits that you get, the seeds that you get from the crop, hybridized crop, is unable to produce a new crop.
Mm-hmm. That's the case with genetically modified seeds.
Yeah. And then when you start playing with the genes or something like that, this gives rise to unnatural mutations in the body. That is cancer. Mm. Conversion of a normal cell into an abnormal one.
The digestion of that food is interrupted and it makes weak tissues, and the weak tissues then become, they behave strangely.
Mm-hmm. It's a long-term process. They say that it requires minimum 5 to 6 years to get a normal into abnormal one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so the transformation is so silent or so slow that the immune system doesn't recognize it. And it only recognizes when it's in advanced stage, and it is too late then. And secondly, if the hybridized crop doesn't have immunity by itself, how come we gain immunity from that?
How can we? Yeah.
that's a big question. And now this has been used in animal farming as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let it be cow, let it be chicken, let it be anything else, big or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all converted into an industry as such. And we look at it as a profit-making business. And then people are not aware of all these things. So the whole food had changed. And unless and until we understand this, we educate people for that, how come we can conquer cancer? It's not possible.
Right.
So the first thing that is required is really reach the root cause of the cancer. This is the root cause. Then there are other causes. Pollution is another big cause, so to say. Addictions like tobacco is big cause.
Mm-hmm.
Since this is also related with the genes and other things, So heredity is now a big cause. And then stress, depression, psychological factor, these are also causes, various causes of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many, many theories. There are many, many ways one can get cancer. So if there is accumulation of 1, 2, 3, 4 causes, the higher are the chances of getting a cancer. So at least those who are in a disease-free state, who have already suffered from cancer, they are prone to cancer within next 5 years. In conventional medicine, when a person survives 5 years, then they say, oh, okay, this is a good result.
And they count as a survivor at that point.
Yeah. So if a person gets cancer at the age of 40, 50, and he survives for 5 years, what one is going to achieve from that? And when it happens to kids, mm-hmm. this is the most miserable part of it. But then it is so. So I started working on secondary prevention of cancer, or prevention of secondary cancer, and found it difficult because people are reluctant to take treatment for that. Now, to identify cancer as cancer-prone person primarily is again a tough job, because it is dependent on so many factors. But see, if you have a heredity of cancer, if you are addicted, if you have a lot of stress, and if your lifestyle is not healthy, unhealthy, like having junk food, fast food, or irregularities in timings, etc., etc.,
mm-hmm.
you are likely to get cancer. Now, at this stage, generally nobody will listen to your advice. If you ask them to change the lifestyle, to leave the addictions, and to have healthy food habits, etc., etc.
Before they get cancer, you mean?
Before they get cancer.
Even the first time, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Because we see some cases and we note that, well, this man is prone to cancer at a primary level. It may occur within 1 or 2 years, it may occur after 5 years, but he is prone. And if you start advising people for that, they won't listen. They say, okay, if it happens, then we'll see. Why to bother, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it is the other way reaction. Oh, they will get depressed. No, I'm going to get cancer.
Uh-oh.
And so it becomes more miserable then. And they definitely get cancer then in that
situation. Right, because they're unhappy.
Yeah. In a way, it becomes very difficult at that situation. So neither things work, either prevention at secondary level or prevention at primary level. And so the patients, when they are compelled to seek alternative, when conventional medicine fails and mm-hmm. when there is no ray of hope,
mm-hmm.
in such conditions, they start for searching anything. They would do anything at that time, or something
right.
like that. And I have been dealing with these patients only for last so many years, at this last stage of life, or something like that. But anyway, even that work is also required. I don't say deny that. But more, it would be appropriate to prevent cancer at primary and secondary level, and to make people aware that these are the reasons of cancer. And if you are prone, you become aware, mm-hmm. at least,
mm-hmm.
and start avoiding these causes, mm-hmm. and try to remain healthy.
With many diseases in Ayurveda, mm-hmm. there are symptoms that occur that mm-hmm. tip you off that maybe a bigger disease is forming down the road. Is there anything like that with cancer, where a small symptom might be popping up that lights the light up for you to think, uh-oh, we need to really watch out for this now?
Okay. It's rather difficult to say about this, because cancer has too many varieties,
right.
too many types, and it differs from variety to variety, or something like that. In India, it's most common is the mouth cancer, and that is associated with chewing of tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a particular habit of putting tobacco at a particular place in the mouth. There develops a patch called as leukoplakia. It's a whitish patch. Mm-hmm. And that's a precancerous condition.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep on observing the mouths of people who have come to me for some other reason, but he's chewing tobacco. And then I definitely see whether there is a patch or not. And if I see a patch, I definitely try to make him aware
mm-hmm.
that this is a precancerous condition and you have to get rid of this by any way. So I would start medicines for that as well. Many a time, patients don't really listen. They don't leave the habit of tobacco. They continue. Later on, they launch into mouth cancer. And then they come back again. This is seen. But this is one condition. particularly in breast cancer, many a times women don't express that they have some doubt or something like that.
Emotionally, they don't express
emotionally. Yeah. Uh-huh. And everybody tries to hide the thing just with a disguise that, oh, if it turns out to be cancer, what am I going to do? Better let it remain hidden or something like that. This is very bad. But it happens like that. They just keep on passing the days. And one thing is there that it doesn't pain in the initial stage. So they are not much bothered about that. And later on, when they feel, no, this has now should be, this is to be told to somebody or something, it should be shown to some doctor or something like that. When the doctor reveals that, okay, this seems to be cancer or something, then the further investigations, etc., are done. And then treatment follows accordingly. By that time, it is too late, generally. But there are certain simple procedures or simple ways to understand whether it can be cancer or it cannot be cancer. Generally, the lump of the cancer is hard, immobile. And if it is near the nipple area, it pulls the nipple. So if this is the case, then one should not waste time at all and see a doctor immediately. Retracted nipple, this is a very well sign that it's showing that it's a cancer. Now if certain women, they have pain before menstruation and after menstruation it stops, pain in breast is felt, or if lump is felt in the breast, it aggravates before menstruation and it regresses after menstruation.
That's pretty common.
Yeah. This is not cancer. This is fibroadenoma. That is what they call. Now, this can be confirmed on mammography. And most of the time they will say that it is fibroadenoma. But still, somebody would say better to go for FNAC or biopsy. Correlate clinically or something like that. If any woman in doubt should consult a doctor, should not remain at home. That is the most important thing.
Catching things in a very early stage.
Earlier you detect, the better are chances of recovery. Whichever way you want to go, conventional medicine way, Ayurvedic way, whatever you want to choose. But earlier detection is more important. There is no doubt about that. And if you have a heredity of cancer, breast cancer particularly, then you should be very cautious. Examination of breast by self, maybe every 15 days, 1 month or something like that. And if needed at any time from a doctor, is a must. But herein, I would say hard, immovable lump with retracted nipple is definitely indicative of cancer. Now, in other varieties, it is rather difficult to say that there would be growth of cancer or something like that. Generally, we can go by if there is aridity, if there are addictions, if there is stress, and if there is derailed lifestyle, one should think of as one of the diseases as cancer. I can quote one example, which was mishandled case in a way. The person had heredity of cancer from both parents, mother and father, both suffered from cancer.
Different kinds of cancer?
The male was, his father was suffering from throat cancer and mother suffered from uterine cancer. These are two different varieties.
Totally
altogether.
Different, right.
But this fellow had only once hematuria, that is passing of blood into urine. Only one episode. Now with this, and it was painless. Otherwise, if it's a renal calculus or something like that, it is with pain, acute pain. So it was painless. Now painless hematuria is definitely indicative of kidney cancer. At least when he has a heredity of cancer, the doctor should have investigated. Unfortunately, he was given some medicine like Cital and his bleeding stopped. And further, this was just ignored. After 4 months, he developed severe back pain. Then he took some analgesics, applied some kinds of tubes and other things, analgesics. They didn't work. So he went to a doctor. He advised X-ray. So X-ray was taken. the X-ray showed that one kidney is not functioning. Now again, with a good medical history, this should have been considered as kidney cancer. Because there was history of painless hematuria, there is now pain, severe pain, one kidney is not functioning, this is quite indicative. I don't know, they went into pyelography. And pyelography, the radiologist said that it's kidney abscess query. There was no definite diagnosis. And he was my relative actually, living far away. So my sister called me and she said, without giving any history, she said that they are saying that it's abscess and they want to open up, do surgery. I said, if it is abscess, then it has to be drained. That is true. So they went in for surgery. And then she rang me again on the day of surgery. Now the surgeon says that it is cancer and it's not abscess. So I was shocked.
How old was he?
He's 42. Oof. And I said, okay, I will. He was in Nagpur. So I rushed to Nagpur. It was closely related. And then I heard the whole story. This is a totally mishandled case. On the first instance of painless hematuria, he should have been at least suspected for cancer, kidney cancer. No matter whether he would have survived or not or something like that. That's a different story. But now the disease was totally aggravated. It had crossed the midline. And the doctor said no chance, he won't survive more than 2 months. So we brought him in Pune. I tried my level best. And but he died. Within 4 months he died. He just survived two more months, that's all. So this painless hematuria or painless bleeding through rectum without any piles or something like that, that might be indicative of colon cancer, rectal cancer or something like that. So at least these cases should not be neglected. They should go thoroughly under investigations. And it's an expert job again.
Clearly.
May it be conventional medicine, may it be Ayurvedic doctor, whosoever, he needs to be expert. We may not go to somebody else and getting into a mess or something like that. So this is another pre-symptoms like that. There can be other symptoms like loss of weight and fatigue or something like that. But these are general symptoms.
And those are fairly advanced.
It may or may not indicate cancer. But at least one should investigate.
Right.
That if there is doubt. Generally, I focus on these four aspects. Heredity, sedentary or derailed lifestyle, stress and addictions. If they, these four factors are together, one should think of a possibility of a cancer and try to investigate minimum.
So in the last 10 minutes of our conversation on this subject, let's talk a little bit about what a person can do in their lifestyle if they do see that those factors are lining up.
Okay. Actually, treatment of cancer is very complex. And what we emphasize upon now is Rasayana treatment.
Now, what does that mean, Rasayana?
Okay. Rasayana is a rejuvenating treatment. The stanza says, Labhopayavi Shastanam Rasadinam Rasayanam. Cancer is a disease of body tissues. And what we need to do is strengthen the body tissues, in a way strengthen the immunity. And there are so many factors which have been, or so many medicines or food material, they have been said to be rasayana, having rasayana property, rejuvenating factor property. So among diet, milk and ghee are the best among rasayana. That is why we keep many patients on only milk diet. No other food is allowed. But when I refer to milk or only milk, I refer to desi cow milk that we get in India. Now, if you look into the websites and other things, internet, you will find that there are two types of milks, even in cow, A1 and A2. A1 is cause for cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and autism, etc., etc. And unfortunately, it is widely spread also. And A2 type is another variety. Or the buffaloes in India, they fall under A2 type as well. So that is good. But we emphasize more on A2 type of cow milk. And desi cows, the Indian breeds, they are good in that. So we emphasize on that and even the ghee to be prepared from that milk. Now, with the process of pasteurization and homogenization, it's very difficult to find desi cow ghee as well, because the milk that we get by in packets or jars or something like that, it's generally pasteurized and other thing. In India, at some places we are getting raw milk, many places. Here also now we are getting.
It's getting more
in
popular.
In Bay Area, yeah. We are getting organic full cream milk. So it's better to bring organic full cream milk, heat it, take out the cream, put some yogurt or culture, allow it to get converted into curds, churn it, get butter and butter milk, convert butter into ghee, and then use that ghee.
And yet entirely impractical for most people.
No. As compared to life, nothing is impracticable.
Yeah.
When there is a life threat, so this is the better choice. Then there can be other medicines like Pippali Rasayana, Vallataka Rasayana, Chavanprash, and so many other Rasayana Aushadhas are there, medicines are there. So the main treatment is this Rasayana. To certain extent, we can use Panchakarma. Especially where the major problem of cancer patients is pain. It's a severe pain and really unbearable. So cancer produces a miserable death. That's untimely and miserable death. So according to Ayurveda, the pain is due to Vata Dosha. So we have to see how we can bring back the balance of Vata Dosha. Then only the pain can be manageable. I'll tell you one example. A lady at the age of, say, around 60, was brought to me. She had cancer of the lower one-third of esophagus and stomach. Both were invaded by the cancer. With lung metastasis, and with metastasis in bone, and that was a funny metastasis, left humerus and right femur. Distant metastasis. And my clinic is on first floor, so they lifted her on a piece of cloth to my first floor clinic. And when she was brought in, she was just crying, shouting with pain. So it was a miserable thing to see her in that such a pain.
Right.
I said, okay, we can't handle this case on OPD basis. She had to get admitted. So I got her admitted in Punarosu Chikitsale, that's one in Pune, private Ayurvedic hospital. And then what we noticed was she was barely able to eat anything because the cancer was in the lower one-third of the esophagus and also in the stomach. So only some part of liquid was going inside. She had severe constipation. She had not passed motion or there was no bowel movement for 8 days. And I could just feel the feces per abdomen examination. So we started with Basti. And as she started evacuating the feces, the pain started coming down. And within a span of 1 week, she was totally without pain. She died. After this, she didn't survive.
Right.
But we could see peace of mind in her on her face. And she said, okay, I'm dying peacefully. And that's nothing more, something beyond my imagination or something like that.
Yeah.
So the pain is a very big factor and we have to consider the Vata Dosha in this particular thing and try to understand why it is aggravated and how it can be relieved or something like that. In certain cases, we find that application of leeches does help a lot, even in reducing pain. And another case, malignant melanoma, there were more than 300 lesions all over the body. And one had grown like a coconut. It was oozing, there was a very foul smell and it had severe pain. So we started with application of leeches and fumigation with some medicinal herbs and some internal medication. And we could relieve his pain to much extent because he was having fortachesic every 4 hours, 6 tablets in a day, without which he couldn't bear that pain. So we could reduce the dose from 6 tablets a day to 1 tablet only in the night. And he was in much better condition or something like that. So in these cases, it is important to give at least symptomatic relief and prolong the life to certain extent or something like that. So in acute cases, you have to deal with many aspects. What I find generally is it's very difficult to take the patient out of depression. That's the most important thing. Because the patient sees that there is no ray of hope, no ray of, no way to survive. And with this severe pain and other things, all negativity keeps on burdening the patient. And then there is a vicious circle. That aggravation of symptoms, more depression, more aggravation of the disease, more aggravation of the symptoms, and it goes on like that. In such a situation, if you are by any chance able to reduce the pain, give better quality of life to certain extent, then there are chances that the patient starts feeling little better, he is more positive, the disease regresses, the pain regresses, and you reverse the cycle. To do that, we have to have very good counseling. Yoga therapy works to a certain extent. You may have Shirodhara massage to relax the body and the mind, etc., etc. So, you really need to have a holistic approach. It's not only the physical approach. You need to work on psychosomatic aspect very well in all these cases. And so, it's a tough job how to convince the person that, okay, to have a positive attitude and to fight with the disease or something like that. But that is yet another aspect. And third aspect is something which conventional medicine may not consider or something. I had an opportunity to see a little chap, 4-year kid, suffering from last stage of cancer. He was about to die in 2-3 days. I was literally forced to see that child, because I said there is no point in seeing a patient who is going to die in 2-3 days. When I went to home, his home, the main complaint was severe pain in the legs. And so they had made a venesection in the abdomen and they had put a morphine ampoule over there. So whenever the child used to wake up, he would start crying due to pain. So the parents, just sitting by the side, used to press that ampoule so that the morphine is released. He becomes drowsy and sleeps. There was absolutely no quality of life. Fortunately, when I reached, he woke up, started crying. So they were about to press the ampoule when I asked them to stop. And I demanded olive oil, make it lukewarm, gave a gentle massage. Initially, he resisted. But after 15-20 minutes of massage, he slept without morphine. Then I started conversation with his mother. Surprisingly, she said she had lot of stress during pregnancy and she smoked heavily, 30 cigarettes a day during pregnancy. As a result, the child was born with cancer. Now, he was 4-year-old and she was pregnant again, carrying 7 months. Now she couldn't see his misery, his grief and sorrow. She was again stressed and she was again smoking, committing the same mistake second time. The relatives, the doctors, everybody tried to explain, scold her, everything, but nothing happened. She had her own philosophy. I can't see him like this, I get stressed and then I smoke. I said, look, we have a little different approach. So she was a bit surprised what I'm going to tell. I said, you are alone not responsible for this. So she was further shocked. Then I said, okay, what is the fault of this child? You had stress, you smoked. Okay, you should get punished. It's okay that you get a punishment. But what is the fault of this child? In the law of God, this is not justifiable. So the reason is not traceable during this lifespan. So it has to be traced in the previous lifespan. And Ayurveda believes in that. The karma vipaka is what we call. So whatever deeds we do in our lifespan, we may get rewards or punishment for that in this lifespan, or if not, we may get it in next lifespan. So because you had stress, because you smoked, you invited such a soul with such a bad deed. And might be that he is paying for his deeds and he may be relieved. We don't know what is his fate later on. But in order to avoid inviting such a soul again, you stop smoking immediately. Somehow, she listened to my advice and she stopped smoking. the boy again woke up. I asked his father to give him massage. Again, after his massage, he slept. And then I asked them to boil water, milk with gold and keep it ready. So when he woke up again, he demanded something to eat. So this milk was given to him and he had few sips of that. So there was some quality of life, because they were just sitting beside him and waiting for his death. Mm-hmm. That was the situation. He survived for 15 days instead of 2-3 days. He survived for 15 days. Fortunately enough, the next child was okay at birth.
Mm.
This emphasizes the fact that there can be reasons associated with the past life, especially when we see children like this. And another case in Mumbai, a little girl at the age of 7, suffering from brain tumor, astrocytoma. She was diagnosed with this tumor at the age of 5 when she was operated. At the age of 6, there was a recurrence. She was radiated. And at the age of 7, again there was a recurrence. And the doctor said, nothing can be done now. And we made a visit to her house. And it was such a miserable thing to see her. She was surrounded by so many pillows, because she was unable to sleep. So she was, the cancer had spread into the spinal cord. There was severe pain, headache, vomiting, of course, dry vomiting. She was unable to eat anything. And she was sitting in that posture for last 7 days. She was unable to sleep. So after seeing all this, and we did try to find out the causes, right from her pregnancy and everything, we didn't find anything. So I came to conclusion, she's paying for her past deeds, that's all. So we returned, and I gave them 7 days medicine. She died within 7 days. And she actually got relieved, so to say. Mm-hmm. So when we see cases like this, this is very typical to see that the roots are even in past life. So this is a totally different angle.
Right.
And conventional medicine, it would be difficult for the conventional medicine to believe in this or something like that. But anyway, Ayurveda believes in this, and we believe in the reincarnation. We believe that the deeds are carried to the next generation or next, next birth.
Mm-hmm.
So this can also be one of the causes. And as I said, the whole society now is prone to dreaded disease like cancer. We have to get back to organic farming. There is no way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the message of today's interview that everybody should carry.
Mm-hmm. The one of these things that you can control is whether or not you eat really, really properly grown food.
Yeah. But what we say, the availability is less, it is costly, all things are correct. Okay, true. But unless and until there is increasing demand for organic food, the farmers won't try for it. It is in the benefit of the farmers, it is in the benefit of the society as such. So everybody should start with organic food, and of course getting de-addicted and following properly healthy lifestyle, and other things also should be there. But this is the root cause. And everybody should try for that. Everybody should start efforts in that direction. We changed our food 3 years before. I was realizing this and I was telling people, but we had not changed. So from 3 years now, I am using organic in India, but it's very difficult to find it anyway. You have to make a stock for the whole year, for the wheat, for the rice, for the cereals, whatever it is, or something like that. But this should become a common thing. And of course, the other reasons also need to be addressed. So Ayurveda has a lot to offer. One may read my book on cancer, heart disease and diabetes, Prevention and Cure in Ayurvedic Perspective. It's in Marathi, it's in English, both the languages. And another book on lifestyle, the key to health. But even this Iprasaran is doing a wonderful job reaching large population across the globe. So people should become aware of the things. That's the most important aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot can be talked about this. This is a very big subject. But anyway, we have to stop somewhere.
We do.
So I think with this message that to turn towards healthy lifestyle and particularly towards organic food, we stop our interview here.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Gagel.
Yeah.